Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, your week in IndyCar series, the guest episode. And this time we have, is it Graham Ray Hall or Grom Ray Hall or Graham Ray Hall? We're not sure, but we did ask him, part of the many great questions you sent in for the third generation race car driver, pilot on number 15, Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan Honda, a delightful team that just needs more names in it, I would say. It's too few. We need more names there. Graham had about half hour, 35 minutes or so, and so enjoyed the time that we did have with our man. Going to get to the show quickly here. Just going to say thank you, as always, for listening. Some great news. Cooper Tires just reached out and said, hey, we're doing it again. Told me, which I love. So they'll be back for their third season as one of the key partners who make the good old Marshall Pruitt Podcast. Yes, I named it after myself. What a raging maniac. They'll be back for a third season and looking forward to announcing some other returns and maybe some new friends coming into the good old podcast here. So great fun here with Graham. Thank you as always for the questions you have sent in. Thank you to Cooper Tires, the Justice Brothers, TorontoMotorsports.com, and Bell Racing Helmets USA. And if you get a chance, our listener Q&A show, all listener driven, all your Qs, and I show you my A's. That'll be coming up here right after. Lots of great questions there as well. Lots of fun. The number of silly questions that come in are increasing, and those are also becoming some of my favorites. So in that one, which I just finished recording, gave away some gag gifts for Christmas to IndyCar drivers. So might listen to that. And some of the other questions that came in, and a long piece to close on the future of engines, keeping in mind an engine could be one that is combustion, could be electric. Long close in the listener Q&A show on where I think IndyCar and IMSA might be headed with their next generation engine formula. I know that they have announced what they're doing for 2022, both here on the open wheel side and there in the DPI prototype category. Close the listener Q&A show. A little bit of a long dissertation, a little bit of a soapbox tech discussion about some changes I believe IndyCar and IMSA will need to face and embrace immediately. So that's waiting for you to listen to. Well, let's get going with our man, Graham Ray Hall. A little bit of business, a little bit of fun, and just him being his Graham best here on the Week in IndyCar. It's a Graham Ray Hall appearance on the Week in IndyCar. Been a little while since we had you on, my man. I know that your last appearance, folks really loved, is your ability to blend the world of being an IndyCar driver and also an IndyCar businessman. Seems to tick some really interesting boxes. So
yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
I say let's dive right into the questions. I know we got about a half hour. You've got a dinner meeting that you're heading to. So let's get rocking and rolling. Jordan Darwin says, Graham, how is the funding for 2020 going? And he says, as a driver with a firm position on the business side, do you see any short-term improvements in sponsor negotiations now that Roger Penske has bought IMS and IndyCar?
Well, I would say so far, well, I guess I'll answer that first, you know, talk about that first. And I think it's a great thing. I think there's a lot of people that are skeptical. And I think as everybody should be that, hey, a team owner now owns the series and owns the track and everything else. But, you know, my sense is that that there is going to be no influence there, particularly on the series side. The track side, I definitely think Roger's going to take it to a whole new level. And I'm extremely supportive. I think it's a great thing that just happened, you know, to our sport. For reference, from what I understand, both Liberty Media, F1, and NASCAR tried to buy the Speedway and the series. And if anybody thinks that those two were going to really help try to boost IndyCar racing, they're mistaken. And so I definitely think it's a positive, a great thing that Tony George struck this deal with Roger and the entire Penske family to take over. So, you know, to answer the real question, has it benefited us in the short term? No, we have not seen any difference to date. I do not expect that we will, though, until further down the road. I think people are going to want to see the changes. I think people are going to want to see the proofs in the pudding, really. You know, what's going to come of that is going to be important. But, you know, on our side of things, we're pretty fortunate. You know, our staff has worked very hard to get long-term commitments. And I think that we've done that. All of our deals are long-term deals. All of our deals are very solid. And we're excited to go forward, you know, with the partners that that we have. I mean, it certainly is a far cry from where we were in 2015. I can tell you that. So, you know, it's been nice. Actually, I've been in meetings all day, both with IndyCar as well as our team. I'm in meetings all day tomorrow with the entire team, you know, looking at development plans, everything we're doing going forward. And it's a breath of fresh air to see the things that we're capable and able to do now due to those sponsors versus the position that we were in before.
Zachary Bertram says, Graham, what are a few points on your top 10 list for Roger? If we're talking improvements to IMS or IndyCar in general, are there things that come to mind that if you get a moment with Roger, if you already haven't, you'd like to say, hey, Captain, these are a couple things you might put towards the front of your list?
Well, from a facility standpoint, there could be some upgrades at Indy. You know, that's an obvious. You know, I don't want to change personally, not that I own it, obviously, but to use the term, I don't want to. I just don't want to see I really don't even want to see the grandstands change. You know, I mean, I'm, you know, to me, I'm a kind of a traditionalist. I like the way it is, but you know, there could be upgrades. There, the better fan experience in a couple areas. I'm also not a fan of what Daytona did. I think it's too extreme. You know, the whole Midway and, you know, getting sponsors to buy out areas and things like that. I personally am not a fan of that, but I can see value, you know, to how do we upgrade the facility to where it's just a better fan experience, TVs, speakers, bathrooms, all these sorts of things that are important, you know, for a fan to experience while they're at the races. I think we could definitely emphasize that. You know, I think that Roger's pull will be hopefully bring another OE to the series. You know, I think that that's gotta be point number one or two, you know, certainly right there. Is how do we get another OE? Because the series is really on the verge of greatness. You know, it really is close to having a major breakthrough. And that, to me, is what would make it happen. So those are a couple of things that I think are fresh off my mind. You know, Roger does everything to the highest standard, to the highest level of class. As we all know, the Penske appearance is so important, and you better believe that's going to include the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I mean, that place is going to look spectacular. I guarantee you there's going to be venue renovations and everything else. It will be better.
Graham, we have Jack Homan, who asks a question that you get every time you visit, and it's some variation between you and your wife driving one another's types of cars. Jack says, Graham, who would be faster? You in the funny car or Courtney in your car on an oval? Says, yep, it's a loaded question.
Well, I mean, look, I'll put it this way. I mean, I think that, you know, obviously a lot of drag racers are very capable, including, you know, my wife. I do think it's easier from a processes standpoint to jump in a funny car and go. It is very straightforward. I'm not saying the driving aspect. I'm saying from a process standpoint, the way you stage the car, the utilization of the clutch, there is no shifting. There is no electronics that the driver directly has to use. You know, you basically flip the switch to turn the thing on, turn on the fuel, which is a lever. And off, you know, when you go to stage, let out the clutch, hold the brake and go. I simplify it there. Obviously I've been around it a lot, so I do know the procedure well. You know, an IndyCar is just so tricky now with the electronics. I mean, you know, even just a hand clutch and learning how to shift and all, she can drive a manual, but, you know, let's be honest, a lot of people, that's a very foreign thing. So it would be easier to jump in a funny car and go. It would be significantly harder to jump in an IndyCar and go fast. So I think that's the long and short of it. Even my father-in-law, who's a diehard drag racer, obviously, and thinks it's the end all be all, he would give you the same thing. And he's told me before, Graham, I could get you running, no problem in a funny car. Even if you had never drag raced, I could get you running, just as quick in a day what he said to me. That's not going to happen in an Indy car, but I think there's a lot of people that are certainly very capable. you know, in that sport, they could do well.
Graham Rahal saying women choose drag racing because it's easier. I think that's what you just said.
Nah,
I'm trying to create a hashtag me too movement somehow here. Just trying to get what?
You know,
no, that isn't what you said. You're
getting me in trouble now. Right.
Let's see. Let's go to Kenny C. I like this question. Does Graham, Alex Rossi mentioned somewhere that he fixed an issue with making mental mistakes in qualifying when a sports psychologist told him to close his eyes and visualize a perfect lap before going out. Kenny asks if you have any mental tricks that help you as a race car driver.
You know, I really just don't. And you know, I get visualization can help certain people. I'm not good at that. I'm not going to lie to you. It's not, you know, for me, just being at ease mentally, you got to put the distractions aside. You've got to be confident in what you have. And when I know that I've got a good race car and I can go out there and we're going to be competitive with a chance to win, you know, typically on those days we do win. You know, it's the mental, like I can tell you the year at Detroit, we won both. I mean, I was so confident and so at ease because I knew, you know, I had the capability in the car and the team and everybody had the capability, and obviously it all happened. And, you know, that's so important. You know, I'm not the type that wants to sit there and think about things forever. I find the longer I think about things, the more I worry about things, the more I mess up, and the same with my team. You put pressure on people, you know, they're bound to fail. So it's not the way that we like to operate. You know, so clarity, mental clarity is I think your biggest key to success.
I love it. We're learning here too. Let's go to Aaron Richmond. It says, Graham, I think Fontana 2015 was the most exciting and spectacular IndyCar race of all time. What are your thoughts on your win 4 years later? Would you welcome a return to Fontana? And do you have any sense as to whether other drivers would as well?
I think Fontana was great this year. You know, just obviously it's really crowd driven. You know, I you know, for me, I think Fontana is an excellent racetrack. You know, the tracks that kind of are bumpy like that, the age that have different grooves and all of those things, those are great facilities to go race at. And they're kind of a dying breed, to be very honest. And so I would love to. I mean, when I look back on it, special moment. When I look back on it, it's a day that obviously I was driven to make some pretty crazy moves to try to win that race. And ultimately it really worked out. You know, for me, it was a special day. It really broke a curse that I felt like I was kind of stuck in for, 8 years or something like that. You know, but I thought it was great wheel-to-wheel racing. And, yeah, of course I'd love to go back.
Let's go to Dean Ackerman. It says, Graham, many teams, title sponsors, even the series branding deals have come to an end when that company's CEO leaves the company. He says the next leader at that company, maybe they don't like racing or just wants to do the polar opposite of the last CEO. He wonders if that was the case with Steak and Shake, which was a popular sponsor of yours.
No, you know, if I'm frank about Steak and Shake, actually, I had lunch at Steak and Shake today. If anybody wants to know, they have a great grilled chicken salad with buffalo sauce. There's my pitch. But no, seriously, they do if you're in a hurry. And I have free Steak and Shake card, so it was a free lunch.
Look at that.
No, if you want my opinion, they got the best deal ever. They came in when we were dying and we just needed any deal. We took it. And the first year, the number 15 car was the most valuable car on the grid in 2015. We won, obviously. We were up front. We damn near won the championship. And it was just the sweetest of sweetheart of deals. And I just think personally that what else were they going to get out of it? And I hate saying that, but that's the way a lot of companies think today, is they want the most benefit. And then once they get what they're out there to achieve, that's it for them. And I felt that was kind of the case. At the same time, you know, they've gone through some tough times lately, and you know, shutting down stores and you know, simplifying menus, having not having the sit down diner anymore, and more to, you know, just a to go venue with a drive through. I mean, their model, their business model has had to change. And, you know, even when we worked with them, Steak and Shake is very financially driven. I mean, you know, we had a lot of opportunities B2B with, you know, different bacon suppliers, different, you know, Monster Energy was active. Monster was a sponsor of mine personally at the time, wanted to replace Red Bull. You know, Monster was like 2 cents more per can, but it was double the volume, the ounces of liquid. And because it was 2 cents more, you know, Steak and Shake didn't want to do that deal, even though they could have sold the product for more. So, you know, that's my point. It was very financially driven. And I just think, you know, they got a great deal. We went off the charts there in 15, 16, 17. And what else were they going to get? You know, I don't know.
I remember texting you, I think it was a late night leaving Rolex 24, you know, I don't know, practice or something like that, qualifying one night. It was about the only place that was open in Daytona. And I remember texting you like, hey, just let you know, trying to put a few extra cents into the old sponsor's bank account here. And I think you texted back, thanks, man, comma, but they're not coming back. I'm like, damn it. All right, let me find another one to go to.
Yeah, look, I love them. I mean, like I said, I really do. It's an Indianapolis company now. You know, I Sardar Biglari, who owns it, was great to us. But like I said, I think we maximize that one.
Let's go to Jonathan Ireland. Love this one. Graham, do you have any good stories you could share from your days of working with the big man, Justin Wilson, as your teammate?
Well, you know, probably the most vivid was Detroit, 2008. You know, he won that race and our cars were so bad. I mean, just so bad. And I will never forget. I mean, I was just in awe. You know, I had raced, obviously with Seb, you know, before that. And while I love Seb, you know, if the car wasn't right for him, Seb wasn't fast. I mean, that was factual, is factual. Justin could take a car that was a total pile and make it go. And it was just like the most fascinating thing to me. And he won that race. And, you know, it was a real lesson to me, frankly. Now, to be clear, the grid wasn't as competitive as it is now. So nowadays, if you have a bad car, you're going to struggle to be in the top 12. Sure. Let's be real about it. But it was still the Dixons and all those guys were there. So it's still good. And, you know, it was just a great lesson and putting your head down and just figuring it out and making it work. And you know, I learned a lot. I learned a lot from that guy as far as, you know, performance. You know, obviously before he passed, you know, we shared the podium together the week before. And, you know, and I learned lessons there about, you know, being the guy in the position that he was in. I mean, he could have absolutely hosed me, you know, in Mid-Ohio when he was on my outside there and had overtaken. I didn't. He could have squeezed me into the grass. You know, we would have taken each other out. Well, big deal. You know, he's only doing a couple of races. That's not who Justin Wilson was. And I like to think that that's not who I am, you know. And I think there was a lot of life lessons. My wife will tell you, people think it's all smoke and mirrors and people can post, you know, about JW all they want or whatever. I talk about that guy a lot. Talk about him a lot. I talked about him the other night at home with my wife about, you know, just future planning and trying to be smart and take care of my family and, you know, prepare if something were to happen to me. As much as you hate to think about that, he influenced me in many ways in my life.
It's crazy to think how long ago 2015 feels like without him being here.
Oh,
and
sure.
I'm not trying to turn things sad here, but I mean, you know, and a lot of people know that he and I, you know, he was among my best friends in the world. And it's just, it's a crazy, it feels like he's been gone for 20 years. And I think a lot of folks who knew Justin feel that way because he had that kind of impact and held that kind of bigger presence in their life. We all have friends. We've all had friends for many years. Not all of them feel like they're a big part of your daily life, whether it's on the phone or, as you mentioned, just things you carry with you. They're always there. So,
oh yeah,
just feels like it's been forever. Let's go to John Ashcraft. Says, Graham, any plans on moving into a car ownership role like your dad and others have done towards the end of their careers?
You know, I've always said no. And in fact, this question came up recently, you know, from my dad. Hey, you know, what do you think? Not about taking over now, but about in the future. Is it something that you'd be interested in doing 10 years from now? And I've always said no. You know, flat out, I see the stress that it puts on my dad. I mean, people can't imagine. And like I said, we're very appreciative of the sponsors we have now, because that stress has been greatly reduced over the last few years. But in 2015, when things really were not good, you know, to see what Dad and Mike and Dave did to keep the team operational, and the commitment that they made, I don't know if I want to be that guy, because number one, financially, I can't afford it. And number two, that's a lot of weight. I mean, it is flat out, it is a lot of weight on your shoulders at all times. But then I sit back and I think to myself, there's nothing I love more than IndyCar racing. So when that time comes, you know, my real, when I'm really faced with that decision, my decision may change, is what I'm getting at. You know, you never know. And that's what my dad always says. You know, this sport made him who he is, and this sport is what he loves. And so what else is he going to do? That's what he always tells me. And that's probably, you know, an accurate statement.
Just think about this. Bob had hair down to his ass at the start of 2015. It all fell out as a result.
Well, not as of 2015, but he did have long hair, you know, back in the day. And I got some great photos that were recently sent to me of that. So maybe those will pop up on social here soon.
Bribery. I love it. Speaking of dads, Joey of the Prius says, Graham, can you confirm or deny that your dad is actually Billy Joel? And has anyone seen your dad and Billy Joel in the same room? I got to admit, man, today it looks like the same guy.
Yeah, he is not. I don't think he has the talents, that Billy Joel does. At least certain talents. Unfortunately, no, I cannot confirm that. I'm sorry.
Ben Cohen asks a question. This might lead
you get some interesting questions on here.
We haven't even gotten to the interesting ones. Ben Cohen, great friend of the show, says, Graham, do you listen to the Week in IndyCar podcast, or do you take in any non-racing entertainment in your free time? You don't have to lie here. I know you don't. You've got better taste.
You know, I'll admit, I have listened. I don't listen all the time. I also don't. I hate to be this guy, but don't really listen to much. I don't really watch much. You know, Marshall, you know, you and I just talked about this, but you know, typically life has me a little bit overly occupied right now, particularly in the off season. With, you know, I've kind of stepped into the role and leading the charge a little bit more with the dealerships and things like that. So I'm pretty occupied. I do get very envious of guys that have time to go to movies and stuff like that. That hasn't been me. The one thing I absolutely always take in, and people know this, is I do not miss a Buckeyes football game. I mean, you know, if I will do whatever I have to do, to get that, on my phone, TV, whatever.
I'm going to rename this the Weekend Buckeye IndyCar somehow. Maybe then I'll get your consistent participation. Let's go to our pal JJ Gertler, who says, Graham, what's the most challenging part about being a taller driver? And he says, what's the best part besides being able to stand next to Allmendinger and see everything?
Well, best part is, I'd rather be tall in daily life. I'd much rather be a tall human being, because my wife would have never married me, or any female that I'd ever met before that. I hope my wife's not listening. Would never have been interested in me if I was 5'4". And to be frank, I like being tall. The downside is I'm heavy. It was interesting. Yesterday I did my driver physical. My resting heart rate is 34 beats. They said I have the lowest resting heart rate in the series, which tells you that my physical fitness and my heart condition is very, very good. But yet I'm the heaviest guy in the series, probably by 10 pounds over Daly or maybe Ryan or somebody like that. So that gives you an example. I'm not saying I'm the most fit guy, but I'm saying, you know, I don't slack off, you know, but I'm big. I'm a big bone guy. Rossi's big. He's tall, but he's got that really thin build. You guys have seen my dad. I mean, you know, I blame it on Bob. I mean, genetics. I'm not a rail. I'm just not. But
yeah,
I would much rather that in normal life. It's just where it gets really hard, to be completely honest, is when I drive the sports cars.
Yeah.
Because I weigh 60 pounds more than Elio. You know, and probably more than that over Ricky or close to. And they don't ballast those cars to get even. So for me to match lap times when I'm carrying 60 pounds more around, that does have an effect. You're an engineer, and you know that.
That's 0.6 of a second right there.
You know, but that is the way that it is. You have to overcome that. Not an easy thing to do.
Well, as a fellow, quote, big bone person, I just lied to myself. I know what you mean. And my wife has told me the same thing. Like, if you were 5'7", I wouldn't have married you. So it's not like I'm tall. I mean, I'm 6'1"-ish, maybe. But, I would be single otherwise. All right. We've got, what do we have here? I got about 5 more minutes or so before I got to let you go. Let's get through a couple more here. Jared Burcham, love this one. Graham, you have a great collection of Ducati motorcycles, and most are 0 mile bikes. Is there anything in your contract that says you're not allowed to ride a motorcycle on the street? And which bike in your collection right now is your favorite?
Well, no, nothing specifically states that. I bought a bunch of them over the years. You know, it hasn't been I've kind of showed them recently, and I think Ducati wants me to do a big story for them on it. With Drive magazine or Drive, you know, the Drive or whatever they call themselves and all that stuff. But, you know, when I was a little kid, my dad had a yellow Ducati Super Sport, and man, nowadays they'd never let you do this, but he used to just put me on the back. And when we'd actually start moving from the stoplight, he'd just reach around and just grab me. And we would just go blasting down the back roads like that. And it was greatest memories for me. You know, people wonder why I'm such a gearhead. It was times with my, you know, I was found with my dad. And so, you know, it just kind of evolved from that. I love Ducatis, their artwork. They're in my house. My wife's nice enough to let me do that. But yeah, I've got way too many bikes. I'm not, you know, proud of that, but I do think they're really solid investments. And for me, you know, which is my favorite is probably, that's a really loaded question. I ended up meeting Chris O'Hare, who's the head of sales for Ducati North America. And so every new bike, every special edition new bike that comes out, they give me number 15.
Wow.
And so I do have a really cool series of number 15 bikes, probably the most special I've never shown on social media, is a 1993 Ducati Super Mono, which only 65 were ever made. It's probably still the lightest motorcycle made ever. Most were crashed because they were race bikes, you know, that were basically out of the box race bikes. I found this thing in a collection with 0 miles, and it happened to be number 15.
Wow.
That was it. Cause I frankly never really was interested in a Super Mono, but, it was kind of just a perfect scenario. And so that's probably the most special bike that I have. But yeah, I don't know. They seriously, their artwork to me, they're so beautiful. I don't know. I don't know what to do. Oh, so the contract part, no, technically no, I can go ride a motorcycle, but if you've driven on the streets with distracted drivers, the last thing I need to go do is ride a motorcycle.
It's actually safer to be on track with 23 or 32 other IndyCar drivers.
Exactly.
A crazy proposition. All right. Exactly. Two quick fire questions, and then hopefully a sweet one to close. First one is from Dan Glass. He says, Graham, how would you like your name pronounced? Graham or Graham?
Graham.
Really? So we just were cutting letters out of it. We're cutting the AM off, or we're kind of cutting some stuff out. We're cutting the HA off in the middle. We just go to Graham. All right.
Interesting. Well, you know, the way people spell my name in so many different ways and misspell it, and my last name's always butchered, so it doesn't really matter.
I just refer to you as Graham Rahal because it's just easier phonetically. Alan Sader says, Graham, what's it like working with David Letterman as a business partner? And I guess that begs another question. Are you guys regularly engaged on the business end?
No, I'm not. So to be very transparent, you know, the way things have changed in my recent times is, you know, I mean, I'm involved in the sponsorship and stuff like that, but I'm not like I was. You know, my commitment, my focus has been turned to, you know, really like drive the damn car, you know. For a long time, it was necessary that I was always on the road chasing sponsor dollars and stuff like that. And I'm still very involved. I mean, I talk to the heads of United Rentals all the time and Total guys I'm always with and stuff like that. But to be clear, like Dave, my connection with Dave is friendly. You know, my connection with Dave is I drive for Dave. He watches on the weekends. He gets excited and he texts me or whatever it may be. He watched my episode with Leno and loved it. You know, stuff like that. I don't deal with Dave on a business side, and that is the way, you know, it should be.
Okay. We're going to close here. Final question goes to Justin Everett. It says, Graham, are you hopeful that RLL adds a third car for the upcoming season, or would you prefer for it to remain as a two car team? And I'll also just throw in here, we've heard the Hinch, yay, Hinch, no, who knows? Keep hearing some more positive things about Hinch, but nonetheless, you like it at two? Would you be open to three if it was the right person?
Always open to three if it's the right person. It's that simple. You know, if it's beneficial, you know, I think I'm always open to it, particularly a guy like Hinch who's very experienced, so I think can add a lot to the equation. Always open to it, but needs to be done right. You know, we as a team have put a lot of effort in. I can't tell you, like, since Laguna Seca, our heads haven't come up off our desks, you know, and that includes me. I mean, people think, you know, I check out in the winter. And often people are like, oh, where are you going on vacation this winter? We haven't gone on a vacation. There is no vacation planned because, you know, frankly, from a fitness standpoint, I got to be focused. From a workload standpoint, you know, the guys have dedicated so many hours into the aerodynamics, into damping, into all, you know, simulation, all of these different areas. We want to win. I mean, this team is full on prepared and capable to win. We're giving every ounce effort we have to win. And so, you know, that third car needs to be prepared to add to that. And if it comes in and it's short on budget and then it has to pull from, you know, somewhere else, that's not going to help. Or if it stresses out the owners and the cash flow becomes low, that's not going to help. So, you know, we have to be smart, frankly, about what we're doing here. And, but Hinch is a great friend, you know, love to see him, you know, get back in a seat. I personally think he got absolutely burned. I could be very vocal about it. Cause I do, you know, I've kind of, again, being a friend, I got a lot of the in-depth sort of information and the promises and stuff that were made to him. He got burnt, and that upsets me. And I'd love to see him go out there and do nothing more than, you know, kick his old team's butt. But, you know, we'll see if it happens or not. I'm not sure.
Justin closes by saying, Graham, you're also my 5-year-old nephew Carter's favorite driver and wonders if you're able to. Could you give Carter a shout-out to close the show?
Absolutely. Happy, well, not his birthday, I guess.
Well,
I
was let's say it birthday, is. We'll not. Just say
happy
it is.
Happy birthday, Carter, but it's not your birthday. So, Justin, you can cut this and send that to him later. But I do appreciate him being a fan. Kids are the future. Kids are what we need. Kids are what we're focused on and trying as a sport to figure out how to attract more. And if Carter's been to a race, we appreciate that. We appreciate you bringing him out, and hopefully we can get him to be tied into this and love this and carry it on forever. That is our single biggest goal in IndyCar racing right now.
We're going to have Carter sponsored by United Rentals and Total Oils as well. So, I mean,
there you go. You
know, look, 5-year-olds are getting picked up in IndyCar. I love it. Graham, Thanks as always for taking some time, and I look forward to speaking soon.
Sounds good, man. Thank you.